not in a way of that they're bad, but in a complete uninterest in the thoughts that come in about your practice.
So just to paraphrase, because your voice may not be loud enough for the reporter, you read something written by a person who had an awakening experience in Zen, and one of the ways this person expressed it was that as a result of the awakening, and I might also say as a method of entering awakening, he or she totally put down all thoughts, all ideas, all concepts, had what you called a disregard for them. Not so much that they were bad, and not in order to do battle with them, but because as a result of this experience, this person clearly saw they were irrelevant. Therefore, not something that you need to struggle with, figure out, make an accommodation for, all the ways in which human beings normally deal with thoughts and feelings and emotions and situations, is we need to make some accommodation, need to take some action that will have a hopeful result in order to change a circumstance that is present now that is not optimal. And then if I do that, maybe then I can do real Zazen and then really get enlightenment. So you're off and running and you're entangled. It's like being stuck to a tar baby. The harder you try to get out of it, the more entangled you get. So this is an excellent statement and question, because it addresses an essential point in Zazen practice. This is an essential point. And one of the things that I was going to talk about tonight, which are these, you could arbitrarily break it down into four essential aspects. So the first essential aspect of Zazen practice and Zen practice in general is the ability to focus on one thing. Now, that does two things. One is it gives your mind an anchor so that these thoughts that normally come up and trap your mind, more and more you're able to let them be there. So initially it's kind of a virtual ignoring. It's an ignoring by virtue of you're maintaining your mind on one thing, be it the count, one, two, three, or the actual sensation of breathing, the in-breath and out-breath, called following the breath, or working with a koan, where you pick up the nub of the koan, which is called the wado. In Chinese, in Chan Zen, it's called the wado. The wado is the nub of the koan. So the entire koan might be, a student asked the master Joshu, does even a dog have Buddha nature? This lowly cur? And Joshu answered, nothingness, which in Japanese is mu. So you would focus on just that mu. Or shikantaza is entering deeply into the actual present moment, whatever arises, without sticking to it. So all of these things have in them this aspect of intense focus. This is why we do Zazen generally with the eyes half open. We have a posture that's taut, not sagging. We really try to maintain this incisive alert. I call it plunging into the present moment. Now, doing this is already beginning to unstick us from these sticky thoughts, memories, recurrent emotions and reactions, and all of the accommodations that the mind almost automatically, like a reflex, makes to these things that are very often painful. But sometimes we mull over pleasurable things, some achievement, some good feeling about the world. That can be a real trap too. A feeling of compassion, a feeling of loving, a softening, and then holding on to that, being observing it and wanting it not to leave. All of these things are trapping us. These are the things that this person, who wrote about the reverberation of their awakening realized were irrelevant. They were irrelevant in their details. They're not irrelevant in their substance. This is very, very important. In their details in this realm, which I call the real world, not out in the actual world where we work from maps and plans and we have to live within a structure and we have to cope with this and that, and we have to have goals, all of which are important to survive, which is not unimportant, because if you can't survive, you can't do zazen. But in this real world, the details, the content of the karmic, ever-changing appearance of the moment, the content is irrelevant. Its substance is everything. What is it made of? What is its substance? When you awaken, you see its substance. So its particularities become irrelevant in that moment. It's not that they're ultimately irrelevant in every circumstance, because you, in your zazen practice, have to develop the flexibility to come from this place of depth, understanding the substance in a very clear way that involves no thinking, and re-enter the human realm and act, make choices, be the person you need to be in each moment, to come into accord with differentiation. That's actually very difficult and a very advanced practice in zazen that comes after awakening. But this thing about the thoughts that trap us, so this first step is this focus. Now, one of the effects of the focus I've mentioned, which is to unstick you from the automatic latching onto every thought coming through, to now being the sunshine behind the clouds that are passing. You're staying with the sunshine of this practice, as the clouds of thoughts and feelings and sounds in the room and distractions pass by. They momentarily block the light and then they pass. And you become gradually, the beautiful word that I like to use is dispassionate. Dispassionate. Not uncaring, but disinterested in the content. Okay? I've described it before as almost everybody has a junk drawer. It's a drawer where you put all the stuff that at a particular time you don't have immediate use for, but you can't throw it out. Some people, their whole house is a junk drawer. But, you know, I have a junk drawer in my bedroom. There's also one in the kitchen. And in this, there are all the things that you think might be useful at some point. But when you open that drawer and you see all the detritus of the past in there, and none of it is of particular value to you in the moment, and you might, if you weren't attached to it, just throw it all out and you would never miss it. So this is the attitude towards these things coming through. You know, they're there, they're in this drawer, but I'm not interested in them. They're irrelevant. They're just content passing through. Sometimes it's helpful when a particular situation is troubling one, and one is having a strong reaction to it and getting stuck in old reflex habit patterns, to simply bring the word up, content. This is the content of karma right now. What's its substance? This is the content. Now, the other side of this first step, which is this focus, is the development of something called Jōriki, which is very real. This is not imaginary. You don't need to believe it or not believe it. You will experience it. You will experience some mysterious healing force from this practice. Especially this focusing here in the hara, developing this deep centeredness that persists even after zazen, and a certain kind of clarity of all your senses, a quieting down of the mind, a penetrating quality to the mind, an intuitive, deepening understanding of circumstances and people, and an ability to empathize and connect. You don't aim for these things because you don't have to aim for them. There's no need to. If you do this practice, they will arise. You will probably notice them, and I ask you not to attach to them. Just keep doing the practice. But it does arise. Now, you particularly notice it after a sesshin or a zazen kai, where you do concentrated sitting after sitting after sitting after sitting, and silence in between. And you can develop very, very strong joriki. Ordinarily in sesshin, you start to feel it arising in the second or third day. If you do a long sesshin, like a 7-day, you just plunge into it by the fourth or fifth day. I have had experiences where I was so wrapped up in my practice that for, let's say, 3 days, 3.5 days, I never went outside. And then I just opened the door and went outside, and I opened my eyes, and the world was three-dimensional. Well, so the world is, I saw it as three dimensions. There was a clarity to that. So that's jodiki. Okay? That's just the first of these. If I wanted to chop it up into four pieces. The second piece now directly speaks to what you said. This piece is called dispassion. It is exceedingly important. It also develops naturally from the practice. But we also learn tools to deal with these sticky, stuck places. The stuck places, incidentally, become more troubling the deeper you go into your zazen for a while, because the superficial thinking quiets down. You start to go into your deeper center. And in there are the traumas of your life, the so-called PTSD of your life, the post-traumatic stress, the memories of painful occurrences, the memories of things you did and said that you deeply regret, the deep habits that you begin to see in yourself. Someone said, you know, it's strange, I've been doing this zazen, and instead of becoming more serene, I realize that I'm a worse and worse person. And the Roshi said, no, you're just quieting your mind down and you're seeing these deep aspects of yourself, which will enable you to liberate them, free them, go even underneath them. And the very first step in this process of refining yourself is to see these things clearly. They have been blocking you. They were unconscious, or they erupted from nowhere. You didn't understand where they were coming from. And they were dominating your life from time to time. So this is very, very important that we begin to use these tools to deal with these makyo, which is a Japanese term meaning devilish visions, which come up as our practice begins to deepen, and which seem to really quiet down as your practice progresses, years into your practice. They really do quiet down. But there'll always be certain things that, you know, are deep. It takes a long time to work them out. Sometimes you don't work them out. You just learn to wrap your arms around them. That's just a part of my karma. And it's irrelevant too. It's absolutely irrelevant. Now, why do I say it's irrelevant? I mentioned one tool you can use to deal with these blocks, which include all thinking, all memory, all hopes, all fears. Tibetan Buddhism, a very famous line of Tibetan Buddhism is abandon hope and fear. Abandon fear of some negative outcome and abandon hope of some positive outcome. Abandon it. Be in this moment, this present experience. So one of them is this word content. It's just to clearly see that there is content of this karmic cause and effect. And then there is substance, what it's made of. Okay? Now, another way is to understand that the content of this moment, and by content I mean everything, all dharmas, everything you can see, hear, feel, taste, smell, touch, think, and emote, all of it, all of this is the content of karma, the way that karma manifests in this unitary fabric of space-time at this point in the fabric, which is my center, which is the center of my universe, in this moment in time. It's a very defined place. In the map of space-time, it's this single place. Now, the Buddha said it has three characteristics, this place. It's of the nature of dukkha. In other words, it is incomplete, suffering, unsatisfactory, difficult, it is impermanent. In other words, this point in the fabric of space-time, in this moment, is continually changing, is never the same from one minute to the next. It's dying as something new evolves. It's like the blooming of a flower. It's like the crumbling of an edifice. It's constantly changing. And then the third aspect is there is no self there at all. In other words, it is not your deepest self. And it, whatever it may be, it does not have self-nature. So whatever this thing that you're contending with, it may be your body, mind, emotions, memories, which you call me, and has a name, in which you're very attached to. When I say you, I mean me, all of us as humans. This thing I call me is constantly changing, and it has no self-nature, meaning I can't find the dividing line between it and the rest of the fabric. The dividing line is very arbitrary. I could say, okay, the dividing line is what's inside my skin. All right, so is my saliva me, and when I spit it out, it's not me? How does that work? Am I the air that I just breathed in, and then I'm not it when I breathe it out? But without air, I couldn't be alive, so maybe that's me. Maybe the sun is me, because without the sun, I wouldn't be alive. All these things, all these ways. So these are tools by which you can begin to wipe out these borders, these arbitrary lines and divisions, to really get this third mark of existence. The Buddha called these marks of existence. So dukkha was the first mark, suffering. Impermanence, which is called anicca, and no self, anatta, no self, no individual split off, separated entity-ness. Now, a very, very useful thing to do, to begin, even, and it's very important, don't wait for awakening, because when you have an awakening, you realize that you are only becoming aware of something that you always were. You gain nothing. The Buddha said, truly I gain nothing from complete unexcelled enlightenment. So don't wait for some future time by which you will attain something, because truly there is nothing in particular to attain. A master famously said that. He said, there's nothing in particular to attain. There's nothing in particular to understand. Just give up the notion of Buddhas versus sentient beings. In other words, the thing to understand is that you are already Buddha. There's nothing in particular that you're going to realize other than you are already Buddha. Now, exactly as you are. So, understanding that, you also get that the particularities, the forms that present are inevitable. They could not have been any other way right now. They're the end result of causes and conditions. And an analogy I used was the speed of light, an incredible insight that Albert Einstein had, that that's the limiting speed in the universe. In other words, nothing happens faster than the speed of light. And that has a defined speed, it's 186,000 miles per second. Nothing happens faster. So nothing is instantaneous. Everything spreads throughout the universe. If the, you know, I use the analogy, the sun suddenly went out, by the time we saw it, and it seemed to be this moment for us, that happened 8 minutes and 20 seconds ago. So there's nothing you can do about it. It's a done deal. Now, let's not talk about something 96 million miles away, or how many miles it is. Let's talk about something that's inside you, deep in the cells of your brain, a deep habit pattern that becomes conscious. So something in one part of the brain comes out to the gray matter of your cerebrum and becomes conscious. That also can't exceed the speed of light. So by the time you're conscious of it, all the karmic factors that created it were done, and you're seeing a completed unit of karma. What someone might call a dharma with a small d. Anything, any feeling, any emotion, any thought, any structure, any sight, any smell has happened. It's done. Done deal. Meaning, I don't need to do anything about it. All I need to do is allow it which is doing nothing. That's non-doing. So non-doing is getting that, that it's done. I'm talking about the real world now, not the world that we must enter the minute we leave the sendo, the world where there are things required in order to survive that requires planning and entering a certain kind of a map of virtual life. Hopefully what we learned here makes that held lightly rather than tightly. All right? People hold things tightly. I would call them right-wingers. The left-wingers do too. People hold on to an idea. People who adopt an idea. People who are fundamentalists. It has to be this way. They don't understand this real world. They are so addicted to the world of the map. They cannot disentangle. They can't laugh at themselves. They can't see how silly it all is. So here we begin to get this dispassion because we now, seeing that whatever comes into my awareness is done, it didn't happen instantaneously, it happened, the karmic factors that created it happened sometime before I noticed it. Those factors are completely done. Therefore, I can put it down. It's relevant. It's relevant to the real world. Now, what's not irrelevant is what it's made of, what its substance is. This is what we are doing next. This is the next step. So we talked about focus, concentration, Joriki. We talked about learning to deal with the things that keep us floating on this level of struggle and thinking so we can't penetrate. Learning techniques to do that. And one of the most important techniques is simply holding to your practice. Just that. The third aspect of this practice is deep penetration. Penetrating Zazen. Going deep into one's center. How do you do that? Because everything, including your practice, but even smells, sounds, sights, whatever you're feeling in your body, is happening in the center of your universe. Only you know it. There's a saying in Zen, it's like a man or a woman drinking water. Only he or she knows for herself whether it's hot or cold. This is how intimate you become with your practice. Meaning the entire experience of your moment on the Zen cushion sitting in Zazen is happening in your center. Only you know it. It's bringing you to your center. What is that center? What is its nature? So when mu is an idea, I can contemplate, well, what does mu mean? And mu means nothingness, and what's nothing? But this actual mu is in my center, and only I know it. What is that? What is its substance? I know its form. That was the end result of causing conditions. The mu that I experience right now is done. Its particularities are irrelevant, but its substance is not. What is it made of? You have to enter deeply into that. There's a deep question there. So it's a very important part of Zazen as our practice progresses to have this deep wonderment. With koan practice, we raise it to an intense doubt sensation. But in any kind of practice, there should be a wonderment. What is it? Where did it come from? What's its nature? And you begin to notice something about it. It is. It is. We're so often trapped by the appearance of something that we miss its fact, its sheer fact. It presents. What is that? I say it is, but can that is be apart from my knowing? If I don't know it, can I say it is? It wouldn't be. Okay? And we begin to enter this deep center with deep questioning, penetrating. Now, ultimately, one should be able to sit down in Zazen and go to that place immediately. I mean within a minute or two. You can practice doing that. You put it down. All the things, the struggle, everything, immediately done, drop it, put it down, all right, put it down. Irrelevant, just like that person said about their awakening. It's irrelevant. I know it. Richard used to call it the 10,000-year-old man. I've experienced this a zillion times. It's irrelevant. It's boring. Okay. And we enter this center. Now, in that center, we take the light of the mind that was shining out curiously all the little patterns and changes of karma in the moment that were already done deals. And it begins to turn in on itself and look at its own nature. That's penetrating Zazen. What's the fourth step? Fourth step is something that I'll read you a little koan. Okay. I was anticipating your question, so I came prepared. So this koan is actually, now remember there's 48 koan in the Mumon Kan. This is number 46. This is really late in the Mumon Kan, this classic collection of koan. So the title of this koan is Step Forward from the Top of a 100-Foot Pole. And the case goes like this. The master Sekiso said, how can you step forward from the top of a 100-foot high pole? Again, an ancient master said that one sitting at the top of a 100-foot pole, even if she has attained, in quotes, it, even if she has attained this profound understanding of what its substance is, has not yet been truly enlightened. She must step forward from the top of the 100-foot pole and reveal her true self in the 10 directions. That's the case. This is that fourth aspect. Stepping off, leaping off the top of this 100-foot pole and seeing this truth, this substance, permeating all of existence so that there's no need for an entity observing. It's embedded in reality. People struggle over how is it that the eye formed from evolution, because you'd have to have all these different structures forming separately and then they all come together as an eye. How's it possible? So there must be someone out there that made it, and they call it God, and it's outside of creation. Oh, couldn't it be possible that intelligence, which is intrinsic to you, is also intrinsic to everything throughout the universe? That intelligence is embedded in reality. Not outside reality. This isn't some dumb clay that some brilliant being that can't be seen manipulates. Couldn't it be embedded in reality? Maybe that's what you realize when you jump off the 100-foot pole. So, I'm going to read the commentary on this by Mumon. If you can step forward and turn about, is there anything you dislike as unworthy? But even so, tell me, how do you proceed onward from the top of a 100-foot pole? And then he has this exclamation, aha! Like that. How do you step forward? And it's interesting. So he says here, if you can step forward and turn about, turn about. Think of how we ordinarily experience the world. We ordinarily are here. I am in here. I'm somewhere inside my body, peering out through my senses at a world out there. Okay? So, to use the example of hearing, there is my ear, meaning my hearing, hearing, and the sound. There's like three things. There's the sound, there's the act of hearing, and then there's me, my ear, hearing it. Okay? That's the ordinary way. He said you have to turn about. What if the sound is you? What if the smell is you? What if what you see is you? What if what you think is you? If that's so, why do you need another self that you call me? Where would you put it? In Zen they call it putting a hat on a hat. Now this state is called being blind, being deaf. These are very, very puzzling words. And that's good. Because the response to what I'm saying now should be, I don't understand this. I don't understand it. Because you can't understand this. The only way to get this is to be it. Being something is not understanding something. Understanding involves me and something and something called understanding. There's a koan in the Hekigan Roku that talk about an arrow going through the triple barrier of the thing, the interaction, and me. The triple barrier. You have to be it. You have to jump off this 100-foot pole of being just this center of consciousness to seeing it all the way permeating throughout reality. This is that fourth aspect. And this is where integration comes from, including naturalness, not being special, not seeing yourself as special, not shining your high beams. No one would know that you're a Zen practitioner. Why would they? You wouldn't want them to. It would be embarrassing. Okay? So it's all these aspects. Now I'm going to read the verse here. So the verse goes like this. And there's a couple of translations. I'll read the one that was original on this piece of paper. The third eye in the forehead has gone blind, and he has been misled by the stuck pointer on the scale. Unless you have thrown away your body and laid down your life, it's like a blind man leading other blind men. This is the poem. Another way of translating it is, if the third eye in the forehead has gone blind, you won't mistake the pointer on the balance for the measurement. That's kind of a nice way of putting it. All right? If the eye that's been looking out goes blind, you've jumped off this pole, you are manifesting your body everywhere, then you won't mistake the pointer on the balance for the measurement. And what's the pointer in this balance? Remember, this third aspect, this deep penetrating zazen, we come to a place that you must say has no particular color, sound, smell, taste, touch. People call this space jhana, samadhi. It's a deep healing place. People can get very attached to being there, but they're stuck. They can't move off this point. This is the whole meaning of this koan, leaping off this 100-foot pole where you are the center of the universe. It's very, very important to deeply experience that. And after you've jumped off the pole, to go back there over and over and over, strengthen it, remind yourself that you must learn to jump off this pole. So he said, unless you've thrown away your body, meaning your limited identifications with a body, mind, life, and laid down your life, actually laid down a sense of being a me. They call it the great death. It's like a blind man leading other blind men, and that's really what the world is. It's a lot of blind men leading blind men. So, I hope that addressed your beautiful question, which was so apropos. Aren't you glad before this all happened we've set this all up? Not. So we've actually, yeah.